Senate Judiciary Committee meeting together. We're running a little bit late, about 1:35. Today, we have Senator Meyer with us, Senator Costello, Senator Wojtkowski, and myself, Senator Coghill, as the chairman. Today's committee will be discussing the recommendations of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. And once again, I'm going to apologize to the committee because we got these out to you this morning, but I will give the defense to the commission. They were debated pretty heavily into the weekend, and recommendation wasn't actually settled until about 10 o'clock this morning. So the comment time and our time for getting the packet out to you happened simultaneously. But I'm going to tip a hat to the executive director of the Judicial Council, Suzanne DiPietro, who actually was able to assemble these, get them in order to us so that we could at least read them before the committee meeting. So, and hats off to the commission members who debated. And you're going to see that some of this was debated within the commission, and so will probably be debated throughout the legislature. My intention today is to have the chairman of the commission kind of relay these recommendations to us, giving both the pros and the cons, move through them as rapidly as we can. He has a lifeline, I think, which is Suzanne DiPietro sitting next to him. And then at the conclusion of the meeting today, when we get into the 3 o'clock hour, my recommendation is going to be that we take two different approaches or two approaches to the solutions. And I want you to keep them in mind as you're listening to the recommendations. There are substantive policy calls, and that there are real technical changes. And I'd like to entertain the idea of having two different bills put out, one at least by the Judiciary Committee, and then we can talk about the policy call areas as we get to the end. But I'm going to reserve probably the last 6 or 8 minutes of the committee just to talk about that, so that we have a pathway forward that the public can get to hear us deliberate on. So with that, we have the, I think we have the chairman of the Judicial Commission, the Criminal Justice Commission, I'm sorry, online, and I don't have him on my computer screen here yet, so.
Senator Coghill?
Good, thank you. Put yourself on the record. Thank you for coming before our committee, and put yourself on the record, Greg, and give us your testimony. Thank you.
Very good, Senator. My name is Gregory Razzo. I work at Cook Inlet Region as the Vice President, and I serve as Chair of the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. I'll start with basically a on the last two commission meetings that we held, because the primary purpose of those commission meetings were to discuss potential changes to Senate Bill 91, which was passed last year. So I first would like to begin by explaining a little bit about our process, especially with regard to these recommendations. And we just finished our written report. I would be remiss if I didn't let you folks know that our staff attorney, Barbara Dunham, is really the person who worked all weekend long in order to get these recommendations to you. And certainly the commission thanks her for her very hard work. And we were able to review our notes and get the report out to you over the weekend.
Thank you, Greg, and also I think you're going to get from the committee that same level of gratitude.
Very good. Well, I'm prepared to start, and I'll take a break every now and then in case you do have questions, but if there's no other preliminaries on your end, I'll begin.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it.
So these recommendations from the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission are the result of our discussions and meetings on January 19th and 27th. All of the commission meetings are public hearings. The meetings are open to the public. The meeting on January 19th was actually held in Juneau. And for these last two meetings, as chair, I've taken special special opportunity to receive as much public comment as possible, because the public comment and the testimony that we heard from law enforcement officials, from prosecutors, from the court system really served to frame a lot of these recommendations. They came from the various departments of the state, and we just dealt with them one by one after a very lengthy process. So at these commission meetings, the last two, we solicited all of this very broad information. We looked at a broad spectrum of views from across Alaska that exists with respect to possible approaches to sentencing and administration of justice in the state. I can tell you that every single person that testified and every commissioner approached our duties to the legislature, to the state, with an emphasis on public safety. When the commission was created in 2014, the legislature directed the commission to make recommendations based upon a number of things: the need to rehabilitate the offender, the sufficiency of state resources to administer the criminal justice system, the effect of state laws and practices on the rate of recidivism. And you all will recall last year there was substantial testimony on the extraordinarily high rate of recidivism we have in Alaska. And then finally, and very importantly, peer-reviewed and data-driven research. And it was in that research that we were fortunate enough to be able to utilize the resources of the Pew Trust in being able to collect data, get data from across the state law enforcement community, and then analyze it. So they work very closely with our staff at the Alaska Judicial Council, who supports the commission. Since the commission began its operation, it agreed to forward only recommendations that were backed by data and were evidence-based. I heard the legislature describe this as smart justice last year. In 2015, the legislature further directed the commission to forward recommendations that would, and they gave us three things to consider. First, avert all future prison growth. Second, to avert all future prison growth and reduce the current prison population by 15%. And third, avert all prison growth and reduce the current prison population by 25%. So those focusing factors from the legislature began to be part of the process that ultimately resulted in SB 91 last year. As part of SB 91, when it was passed, the legislature gave new roles to the commission and new tasks to the commission, because the new law requires oversight if we're able to understand whether it's going to be effective or not. So as part of SB 91, the legislature tasked the commission with monitoring the efficacy of the reforms using data collected from certain state agencies. Because SB 91 was enacted in July of 2016, and parts of the bill will not go into effect until January 2018, so the bill is far from fully implemented. The commission does not yet have enough data to assess whether SB 91 is achieving its intended outcomes. And the discussion about the lack of data really framed a lot of our concern as we began to look at the suggested changes to SB 91. These recommendations that we make today over the past two SB 90, over the past two commission meetings, are not based on data-driven research, and they're not based on the data that the legislature instructed us to collect and analyze. And additionally, and probably importantly to you, they're not expected to reduce the prison population, to reduce recidivism, or reduce the criminal justice system's usage of state resources. So in that, in particular, we were unable to meet the legislature's requirement when SB 91 was being initially considered. Rather of the recommendations are based on feedback from members of law enforcement, prosecutors, and the public. This feedback reflected other factors the commission has been directed to consider in making recommendations. These are factors that are very important. They're actually found in state law, and they include the need to confine offenders to prevent harm to the public, so confinement, the effect of sentencing in deterring offenders, or deterrence, and the need to express community condemnation of crime, again, community condemnation. The commission recognizes that the factors it has been instructed to consider in formulating its recommendations often work in tension. It's difficult to focus on rehabilitation and focus on detention and isolation all at the same time. But I can tell you that probably the most important thing that I saw as chair was the fact that the Criminal Justice Commission created by SB 64 3 years ago placed on the commission people with a tremendous amount of experience. And it's that experience, I think, that helps inform these recommendations that we make to you today. And I dare say that that experience is as important as the huge amount of public testimony that we heard over various concerns. So, that being said, I'd actually like to go to the very back of the...
So before you do, Mr. Razzo, I just wanted to make sure people knew that Senator Kelly had joined us so that people would know that he's in on the recommendations part of this. So welcome, Senator Kelly. Thank you, Greg. Continue.
So probably the fastest thing to do, and in accordance, I guess, with the suggested procedure that Senator Cargill is hoping for, are the technical amendments to SB 91, the words that were missed, the commas that are the wrong place, the definitions that need correcting. All of those are found in recommendation number 14 in your packet. And I will not belabor you, and I doubt that I could actually pull it off in explaining why each of these recommendations is included here. These recommendations, however, were unanimous and consensus-based. So consensus-based, what does that mean in the commission? The original SB 91 recommendations were consensus-based, and that meant that I, as chair, required that we all agreed on the recommendations before we sent them to you for your consideration. With regard to these recommendations, we attempted to do that, but I can tell you that the only consensus-based recommendations are those found in number 14 of your packet. Are there any questions about that?
And I think that's a good point. We'll just leave them there, and the members can review them, and it'll be my expectation to draft them up in a separate piece of legislation, Mr. Razzo. So that way, when the language comes out, it'll be something that you, as a commission chair, can look over, and each one of the committee members can look over before we move forward on it.
All right. Some of you know that my main job is being a businessman for Siri, so I won't be able to go into the significant detail about the following recommendations, but we do have staff with us, and I can tell you what took place in our discussions. Recommendation number one concerns the violation of conditions of release, which used to be a misdemeanor. That is when a person is released on bail and they, on release, commit a new crime or violate some condition of their bail set by the judge, and are facing what's called violations of conditions of release. Previously, that used to be a crime. Under SB 91, it became a non-criminal offense. The idea in SB 91 was that there was a tremendous amount of people being held simply for violations of conditions of release, which, don't get me wrong, is serious conduct if it's proven to be true. But the result was that many, many people were staying in jail pre-trial for their violations of conditions of release, regardless of the underlying nature of the crime, regardless of whether they might actually be a threat to the public or not be a threat to the public. Some were technical violations, some were new criminal violations. So we changed it, and that created an unintended consequence. And I think that going forward, as an oversight role, the commission is going to find that there are unintended consequences of SB 91. This is the first one we dealt with. So I'm going to ask Barbara if she can go through number one and explain a little bit of the thinking behind that.
Thank you. Barbara, go ahead and put your name in the record. And Barbara, thank you for your work this weekend.
My name is Barbara Dunham, and I'm the project attorney for the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. So recommendation number one is to return violations of conditions of a Class B misdemeanor. And under SB 91, typically a Class B misdemeanor would receive up to 10 days.
Barbara, I'm going to ask you to hold on a second. I think you need to get that mic just a little closer to you because you're drifting in and out, and which makes it harder for us to follow you.
Yeah, let's try that, sir.
All right.
Okay. So typically, Class B misdemeanor would receive up to 5 days in, or up to 10 days in jail. This recommendation is to have a special provision just for violating conditions of release as a Class B misdemeanor to have that punishable by only up to 5 days in jail. The reason for that is that there needs to be a way to ensure that people who are arrested for violating the conditions of their release were able to be held in jail until the next bail hearing in front of the judge in their case. So that the 5 days was enough to cover weekends and holidays if the person did in fact need to be arrested and held until the next hearing.
So this requires, the way I understand it, it requires at least holding till we can get to a bail schedule hearing.
That's correct.
All right.
I can tell the committee that one of the things that we discussed at our very first hearing on January 19th was really a long description about a number of things that were happening simultaneously with SB 91. And I think it's really important to frame our conversation here today and the testimony by talking a little bit about these things. So just prior to SB 91, the Alaska court system initiated a brand new bail schedule. So the bail schedule applies to B misdemeanors. It applies to all misdemeanors. And essentially, the court system, through its bail schedule, the decree of the presiding judges across the state, made changes to what a magistrate should do for certain offenses. And in a great number of cases, the court magistrate was told by the presiding judges that they were to OR release certain people. And it was a large group of people. So that was going on at the same time as SB 91. A few months after that was decreed by the court as a court order, SB 91 passed, and then at about the same time that SB 91 passed, the state began to make its changes necessary in order to deal with the reality of the fiscal environment, which included significant cuts in prosecutors and in law enforcement personnel for the state. And so there was a corresponding decrease in the amount of people available to do law enforcement at almost exactly the same time that SB 91 was passed. And we spent a lot of time talking at the commission meeting in Juneau about that fact and coming to the realization, someone called it a perfect storm, but I don't think that you can understand the reasons for the public criticism unless you understand that all those factors were occurring at the same time.
Thank you.
So The next thing I'd like to talk about, because there are a number of recommendations here.
Before we move on, Mr. Razzo, Senator Wilkowski has a question. Is it on the VCOR?
I think it's just on the way we evaluate all these recommendations and some information I'd like to hear, Mr. Chairman. Clearly, there's a lot of concern about Senate Bill 91 throughout the state, and I want to try to evaluate all these recommendations. I'm sure there'll be some substantive changes. I think I'm convinced there are substantive changes that need to be made. But I want to make sure that we're not reactionary. I want to make sure that the changes we make are evidence-based. And so it would be helpful for me in trying to figure out which ones should be changed, which ones shouldn't, if maybe a few questions were answered. And one, and I have a list. I just wrote down a couple. Number one, the number of people that would be impacted by the change. So in this case, recommendation number one, how many people actually violate their condition of release in a given year? I'd like to know the success that other states or other communities have had with these changes, because I know we based Senate Bill 91 on what other states had done, and we had heard that it was successful in other states. And again, I don't want to be reactionary. If we need more time to evaluate various provisions, I'd like to know that. And one of the ways that helps is to know the success or failure rate in other states. It would be also helpful to know the cost if each recommendation is implemented or if it's not implemented. So that would be helpful for me, Mr. Chairman, in trying to figure out how we're going to go forward on
that. I think the commission already said evidence base was tough for them to get to. So what we'll do probably is go ahead and draft it up. And when it's drafted up, then the agencies will have to come to us with fiscal impacts. And at that point, we can probably ask how many people are impacted, what is the expected outcome. And probably rather than put that on the commission at this point, because they've already said that evidence-based was not what this is based on. It was based on public condemnation and public input. So, but I think you're exactly right. We need to bring it before us as a document, get some of those things fleshed out, and that'll be a notice to the various different departments that we're going to have to be asking some of those questions, certainly before we let it out of here, so that when it goes up, we can at least gauge that. So I think what we need to do is just go ahead and run through these recommendations, find out what their rationale is for, and then get to that discussion, Senator. So I agree with you, and we'll proceed along that line. So, Mr. Razzo, go ahead and if you want to make comment on that, or you can move on to recommendation number two, because we got 13 to go.
Very good. Through the chair, Senator, I can tell you that we took diligent notes on your questions. Those are the same questions that we have, because we do want to use whatever available evidence that we have to see if there is a correlation, a statistical correlation between SB 91 and what's happening in our communities across the state. We're asking those same questions. We will follow up with the data that we have available to us, and if we can draw a correlation, we will certainly let the legislature know about that. So
we appreciate that.
So number one, it has the potential to be significant in terms of having people spend extra few days in jail. Number two has potentially the same result. Number two, the recommendation is to increase the penalties for theft in the fourth degree offenders. So this has been viewed as the what's called the recidivist theft offenders. And I will let Barbara go through the discussion to explain how we came to this recommendation. But I can tell you, being a person who has been the subject of vehicle theft and having my car broken into, I understand the outrage that people feel when their property is taken and their privacy is violated by criminal conduct. There's nothing worse than that. It's a property crime nonetheless. So, Barbara?
So, this is Barbara. Before SB 91 was passed, there was a provision in the statute that said that somebody who committed a theft of under $250, a Class B misdemeanor, the third instance of that theft would be a Class A misdemeanor, which is a recidivist provision. that was eliminated by SB 91, and the commission heard a lot of testimony from people who said that for people who are committing this offense for the third or subsequent time, that there should be some sort of escalating penalty. And the commission had sort of two alternate choices before it. One proposal was to reenact that recidivist provision that would bump the third offense up to a Class A misdemeanor. Ultimately, what the commission went with was the provision that would not increase the level of crime, so it would remain a Class B misdemeanor, but it would be eligible for up to 10, or punishable by up to 10 days in jail. And the debate surrounding this in the commission really centered on, you know, what is the appropriate approach for dealing with people who have chronic addiction, homelessness, and mental health issues, which are typically going to be the kind of people that commit these thefts. And, you know, some commissioners were concerned that this would be a way of basically criminalizing those issues without addressing the underlying cause. And so everyone on the commission did agree that that these offenders are people who really need to, it really warrants a radical approach, and that, you know, they shouldn't simply be left to cycle through the criminal justice system, and that the commission is interested in finding new ways to divert people out of this cycle. But ultimately, this fix was intended to address justice consequences for theft and really address the community's concern at what is widely perceived as a growing theft problem.
I think that pretty well sums it up. That on the sides of this is we still have yet to stand up the pretrial services, in which case I think if we have this recommendation take place, maybe it's a tool to get pretrial risk assessments, but I think that's probably one of the debates we'll have when we see it actually drafted.
I think the other important thing for the committee to note is that the reinvestment money, the money that was directed towards prevention and towards treatment for folks that are criminal offenders, that money has actually just begun to hit the streets. And the money that was directed internally to Department of Corrections has been used for the training and the development of the various tools that are expected to come from SB 91. But they have not been deployed yet. So, again, it makes it difficult to make recommendations that are evidence-based when the full effect of SB 91 is not hit the streets. Let's jump ahead to number 5, which is probably the most significant thing that will potentially have people be placed in jail. And this is recommendation number 5, which is to enact a 90-day presumptive sentencing range for first-time offenders, Class C felony offenders. So, doing a little bit of a fact track, one of the things that our evidence-based research found was that the evidence strongly shows that an individual's first contact with law enforcement can have a tremendous negative result. And for first-time nonviolent offenders, the fact that their lives are so drastically interrupted through a jail sentence, especially a long jail sentence, actually results in them becoming worse criminal offenders than if they simply were given probation and required to follow the strict terms of their probation under strict supervision.
Greg, can you pull that microphone just a little bit closer? Every once in a while you wander off, and I don't know if it's the connection or you.
Yeah, I wasn't speaking with my big voice. All right, so I was just reminding the committee that the fundamental principle in SB 91 was that when people go to jail for the first time, and they have their lives so drastically interrupted that if the penalty is probation, that generally means that they have a better likelihood of not reoffending. But if they're placed in jail for a period of time, and even a small period of time for a nonviolent offense, then the likelihood is more that they will create, do additional crimes. So on this one, let's talk about this recommendation. So SB 91 provides that Class C felonies are punishable by a suspended term of 0 to 18 months. So that's suspended jail time for first felony offenders. This means that a first-time felony offender convicted of a Class C felony is presumed to receive a probationary sentence from the judge that would include some suspended time. A person receiving a probationary sentence with suspended time does not spend any time in jail up front, but is subject to going to jail if they violate their conditions of release. The purpose of this provision was to provide community supervision for first-time offenders to, number one, allow the offender to maintain pro-social ties to their community and their family, and number two, ensure that the offender would comply with conditions of probation, such as remaining sober, not committing new crimes, and paying fines and restitution to victims. If the offender did not succeed with these conditions, the offender could be made to serve part or all of the suspended time in jail. Now, the Commission heard numerous concerns about this particular provision in SB 91. Prosecutors felt that some violent Class C felonies warranted jail time for a first-time offense and were concerned that there was not enough of an incentive to encourage these offenders to get into treatment. Members of law enforcement were frustrated that this provision was overbroad and did not provide for an offender's immediate incarceration if the offender posed a danger to the community. Members of the community were offended by this provision and felt that it did not express community condemnation strongly enough. Prosecutors and law enforcement preferred a provision that would allow a judge discretion in sentencing and would provide for immediate incarceration if necessary. They thought that there were some cases where a probationary term was warranted for a first-time offender. The judge should be able to impose jail time in some instances, particularly in cases involving violence. So, with all of that, the commission recommended that Class C felonies carry a presumptive jail term of 0 to 90 days for first-time felony offenders. And Barbara, I'll let you go from there.
I do have a question, and maybe, Barbara, you're going to answer it, but Senator Costello had a question on this.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. I understand that these are recommended changes to Senate Bill 91, and this is a particular area of concern for my neighbors. As we debate what to do with this situation, is there anything currently in the bill that prevents a police officer from arresting an individual at the time that the felony was committed?
So this is Barbara. Through the chair, there's nothing in SB 91 that prevents an officer to arrest somebody for a Class C felony. The arrest provisions are substantially unchanged with SB 91. It did allow officers to cite individuals for a Class D felony, so that way they could issue a citation and not arrest the person, and then they would just be summoned to court. But any person who, as long as there is probable cause that the person committed a Class D felony, that person could be arrested. I think the issue that the community might have heard about and that law enforcement was expressing frustration with was the fact that for those first-time offenders, because the presumptive term was suspended time and probation, that those offenders, as soon as if they were arrested and taken to jail, often were released on their own recognizance of OR.
Thank you, Ms. Dunham. Yeah, that wasn't my question, so you did answer my question. So if I understand you correctly, it's up to the discretion of a police officer, and that will be the situation until this new version passes.
Yes, until the risk assessment, pre-trial risk assessment, and those regulations go into effect.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think that answers that fairly well. And so continue on, Ms. Dunham.
So because this was one of the provisions of SB 91 that was of particular concern to the public and to members of law enforcement and to the Department of Law, I think this is probably the recommendation that has generated the most debate. Ultimately, there were several proposals put forward to increase the penalties for first-time felony offenders for Class C felonies.
So 0 to 90 days is the one that the commission
ended up recommending, but there were other recommendations as well, including having different penalties for violent C felonies. I think it's also important to note, C felonies do cover a very wide range of conduct. Some of it the public would probably consider to be fairly serious, and some of it the public would probably consider to be not very serious at all. So the 0 to 90-day range would allow a judge to still impose no jail time and a probation sentence with a suspended term if the judge felt that was warranted.
I can tell the committee that one of the considerations that was on the table was to try and lump a section of the crimes in the code into violent crimes and another section into nonviolent crimes and to have a more severe penalty for the violent crimes. That did not pass.
And I think that will be something that the committee will keep in consideration. Senator Meyer has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and this has been very educating, and I appreciate the thoroughness. But being new to this committee, if something's a felony, it must be pretty bad, even a Class C felony. Could you give me an example of a violent Class C felony, maybe an example of a nonviolent Class C felony?
Good afternoon, through the chair. Senator, an example of a violent Class C felony would be an assault 3. It could include threatening somebody with it.
Suzanne, you trail off on us on that. Get up close to that microphone.
So she's talking about assault in the third degree, which can be a number of different kinds of conduct. It can be threatening somebody with a deadly weapon. It can be causing serious physical injury, and there's a number of other activities that you can do that result in assault in the third degree Class C felony. Nonviolent Class C felony, possession of theft more than $1,000. That would be a good one.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, like Senator Costello, this is one I've heard quite a bit about, and I think people are frustrated if they're threatened with a deadly weapon or assault in the third degree, and then that person gets I think what you're recommending is a maximum of 90 days. It just seems like that's not. I mean, this is just me talking out loud. It doesn't sound like much of a deterrent. And I know you're concerned about, possibly putting people in jail and ruining their lives, and then they come out and they commit the same crime or they're not the same person. But on the other hand, too, I think that we have to keep in mind of the victim. I know if somebody was threatening me with a gun, I wouldn't want just a slap on the wrist, but I know that's a tough one. That's a tough decision.
I think what I'm going to do, and I'm not going to read them off now, but there are C felonies that range from anything from bribery, identification, misuse to sexual assault, and terroristic threatening. So, I mean, it just has a broad range. And if we can get this drafted into a bill, what we'll do is we'll get the Department of Law to come before us, and we'll just kind of go over this, because there is a range. And I think at this point, I would probably start with their recommendation of the 0 to 90 day presumptive, and then we can have the debate on whether we want to divide them into violent and nonviolent.
Okay.
But thanks for Senator Wilkowski gave me the whole list there, and Jordan Schilling, and it got passed down from Senator Wilkowski. But yes, I think the two areas so far that we've covered that I think are getting quite a bit of attention, and rightfully so, is the escalating fourth degree assault, or the B misdemeanors. If you do it more than once, twice, three times, something, you know, somewhere along the line, we need to detain these people. And then C felony, the idea behind the commission, if I remember the conversation, was that we felt accountability by probation, accountability would be better than sitting in jail watching TV. But it turned out that the incentive for them to follow through on the probation was diminished. And so that's going to be part of the discussion as we move forward. So those two recommendations certainly hit the top of the list. Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, just for those who will be coming before us, it would be helpful for me on this one also to just get some evidence on how this has worked in Alaska, how this has worked in other states. If this works, if just the penalties we have in the bill work and people are getting rehabilitated, then that's certainly something I'd want to know. And by the same token, if it's not working, if people are getting off and committing other crimes, then I certainly want to know that as well.
And I think we'll get as ample a public testimony as we can. I think going to other states, we did the evidence-based, and I think we're going to have a harder time getting that evidence-based, only because these are really based on the public input from the police and the public who are just tired of being stolen from, and they're tired of seeing the criminal on the street the same day that they did act number one. So I think that's why this one and the escalating B misdemeanor became kind of the big question. So, Mr. Razzo, I interrupted you, and as you can see, it's going to generate some conversation in the committee.
Well, these are difficult discussions. You almost have to be a criminal lawyer to even do it, and it's been a few years since I've been a criminal lawyer, but I can. I think it's important that as the committee goes along, it begins to understand the presumptive sentencing process in Alaska. So through the chair to Kevin, to Senator Meyer, for Class C felonies, the maximum sentence is 5 years in jail, all Class C felonies. The presumptive range, the range that the judge is told to consider to sentence somebody this revision, is between 0 days in jail and 90 days. However, even for a first-time felony offender, if the judge hears from the prosecutor and it's proven by clear and convincing evidence that the case is aggravated, there are 23 different aggravators in our statute that a prosecutor can use to seek a sentence that is outside the presumptive range. Likewise, there are some mitigating factors that those come into play. But generally speaking, there are a number of aggravating factors that a judge can hear about and a prosecutor can attempt to prove in order to go beyond the presumptive range up to the maximum of 5 years in a Class C felony. So I hope that helps.
Thank you, Mr. Rizzo. And I think it's also goes right to the thing you brought up earlier, and that is the Department of Law's resource question on prosecuting the implementation of Senate Bill 91. So I think those need to keep before us as we think through the best way to go forward here.
So let's go back then to number three, which is, I think this one was a unanimous vote of the commission, and that's to allow municipalities to set different non-incarceration punishment for non-criminal offenses that have state equivalents. So here you get into another little bit of a nuance, because we have in the state offenses that cannot result in jail time. And those are called non-criminal offenses. They're also called violations. And what this recommendation allows is that it basically says SB 91 has no impact on your city's list of violations, except for the extent that if your violation is the same as the state violation, then they should be treated similarly. But if you've got another violation that the state doesn't have, spending too much time at a parking meter, you can treat that however you want if you're a municipality. So we focused on crime. We didn't focus too much on non-crime, and that's really what number three goes to, if there are any questions.
Yeah, that's pretty close to a technical fix, but it came to us from the municipalities that said there was unclear how they could do that enforcement, since we had put something in that had a prohibition language in it.
You know, a big factor that goes into all of this is to make sure that you do get the input from folks across the state, and what we found out in our January 19th hearing was that at least the municipality in Juneau didn't have some of the information available to it. So we are doing our best to keep as many interested stakeholders as possible in the loop as we work through these requirements from the legislature.
I think we can move on.
Number four is to revise the sex trafficking statute. And this one here is a little bit complicated, so I'm going to ask Barbara to talk about it.
Thank you, Barbara. Just put yourself on the record again for those who are recording.
And this is Barbara Dunham with the Criminal Justice Commission staff attorney. Through the chair, this is, to be honest, not quite my wheelhouse, but I do understand this provision in SB 91 did not come from the commission, but because it was included in SB 91, the commission decided to take up what it turned out to be a bit of an unworkable provision in practice. So this change is recommended, and I won't read it out because it is very technical. But my understanding was that it was, as implemented in SB 91, it was hindering prosecution somewhat for people who are, in fact, committing sex trafficking. And this change would allow them to still prosecute people who are committing sex trafficking, but would not affect people who are engaged in the sex trade and simply sharing resources. And that was, I think, a concern expressed by the sex worker community.
Yeah, we had commission testimony from the Department of Law that said that people could still hide themselves as a sex trafficker under the law as written, but if they wanted to have a different charge for those receiving compensation for prostitution who were sharing resources, that would be a different story. And so I think that was fairly clear, and I know that that was debated some, but it's still a new topic to us.
We hear quite a bit of testimony from sex traffickers, however. Sex workers, not traffickers.
Right. But I think that's pretty straightforward. We can move on.
Okay. Number six is to enact an aggravator for Class A misdemeanors for defendants who have prior convictions for similar conduct. So SB 91 enacted a presumptive sentencing range, again, the judge's choice, from 0 to 30 days. For most Class A misdemeanors. And this sentence can be increased up to a year in some cases. For certain violent offenses and sex offenses, for cases where conduct was among the most serious conduct included in the definition of the crime, and for cases where the defendant has two or more criminal convictions for similar conduct. Basically, what this recommendation does is, on that very last thing where the defendant has two or more criminal convictions for similar conduct, that's an aggravator. The recommendation is to change the aggravator to the situation where the defendant has one or more criminal convictions. But to add, okay, yeah, not to change it, but to add it, add an aggravator.
Got it, okay.
So, taking into account one prior criminal offense could aggravate that sentence.
Okay. I think that's pretty straightforward.
Right, the seventh recommendation concerns the Alcohol Safety Action Program. It's called ASAP in the business. The ASAP program provides monitoring for misdemeanor DUI and refusal cases to ensure that the defendants are getting their or doing their treatment. In 2015, the commission found that the ASAP program was overextended and recommended that the program either be more robustly funded or be restricted just to DUI and refusal offenders rather than any offender who did a crime with alcohol as part of that. Accordingly, SB 91 limits ASAP to offenders who have been convicted of DUI and refusal. At the same time this was going on, though, this SB 165 was making its way through the legislature, and that related to minor consuming alcohol as a violation. And minor consuming alcohol is a sort of case which appears to a great deal in district court. So there's a lot of magistrates dealing with minor consuming alcohol sorts of cases. The commission's recommendation is that for minor consuming alcohol, that they be allowed or be able to take advantage of the ASAP program so that the youth can be monitored to see if they are complying with the probation related to their alcohol violation. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, thank you. We can move on.
Number eight is to enact a provision requiring mandatory probation for sex offenders. This was an oversight of really, I think, a technical fix here. The commission recommends that the legislature enact a provision requiring sex offenders to serve a period of probation as part of their sentence. I'll explain how SB 91. Ms. Lavoie here.
So this is Barbara Dunham through the chair. I'm not really sure. I wasn't around for that process. I do know that there was a provision that was repealed, so as not to conflict with a different part of SB 91, and that inadvertently repealed this mandatory requirement. I also don't think that the commission didn't hear any evidence that, you know, there were any sex offenders getting through this loophole. I think it was just a technical fix that has been noted. And the commission decided to leave it up to the legislature how exactly it wanted to enact this, where in the statute it would like to put this provision.
Okay, I think that's pretty straightforward.
Let's see.
We can move on to nine.
So number nine is clarify the length of probation allowed for theft in the fourth degree. The commission recommends that the legislature clarify the allowable probationary period for first and second theft in the fourth degree. Barbara, you want to talk about this one too, if you would?
This is Barbara Dunham through the chair. The commission recommended that an offender's third offense of theft four, so that's again theft in a Class C misdemeanor under $250, that would be punishable by up to 5 days of suspended jail time and 6 months of probation. The first and second offenses are non-jailable offenses. However, the commission did agree that those offenses should also come with probation time in order to encourage defendants to pay their fines and their restitution. So Class B misdemeanors generally have a maximum probation term of 1 year. The third instance of theft four under SB 91 has a maximum probation term of 6 months. And the commission would like to ask the legislature to clarify what the maximum probation term should be for the first and second instances of theft four.
Okay. Well, we'll write in what we think is a good clarification as we draft up a bill, and then we'll just debate that particular section out. So we'll look for a recommendation. Thank you.
So recommendation number 10 through the chair requires victim notification only if practical. Now, we understand at the Commission the Alaska Constitution's protections for victims, but SB 91 requires the court at the time of sentencing to provide the victim with information on where to find information about the defendant's sentence or release and the potential for a defendant's release. However, what happens in reality is not all victims want to participate in sentencing, and a lot of times the court won't have current information regarding how to contact the victims, and so consequently that can stop the show, really. So what we recommended is a simple word change to allow the court to contact of the victim if practical. So basically use their best efforts to contact the victim.
Thank you, and I think that makes sense, and then we'll debate the word practical and find out if there's any other words that want to find its way in, because I think we want to push the limit to where the victim is notified, if at all possible, in every way we can. So we'll just have to debate whether practical has too loose of a definition, but we'll work on that, and we'll take it. We'll start there. Thank you very much.
So the next one, again, is a pretty straightforward fix. Number 11 is recommendation concerning felony DUI sentencing provision should be in one statute. Driving under the influence is a Title 28 offense. The sentencing provisions are in Title 12, and so the consequence for DUI isn't found where you would expect to find it along with all of the other crimes.
This is Barbara Dunham through the chair. There is a provision in both Title 12 and Title 28, and the Commission's recommendation is just that there be just one provision, either in 12 or 28.
Oh, I see. So that in charging and sentencing, you go to one code for both the charge and the penalty?
Yes.
All right.
The next recommendation is recommendation number 12. This is the Department of Corrections recommendation. And by way of background, this is concerning the new pretrial services department. It hasn't gone into effect yet. SB 91 requires that the commission shall establish, or the Commissioner of Corrections shall establish and administer a pretrial services program that provides a pretrial risk assessment for all defendants. Recommendations to the court concerning pretrial release decisions and supervision of defendants released while awaiting trial is ordered by the court. So the concern is that all defendants are subject to this pretrial services risk assessment. And there's going to be situations going forward
This is Suzanne DiPietro with the Judicial Council. So the language of the new statute that tells the pretrial services division officers or the commissioner what to do for the pretrial services function suggests that all defendants should be given a pretrial risk assessment. This will be difficult to give all defendants a pretrial risk assessment because many defendants actually are summoned to court and do not actually go to jail. And so the idea of giving a pretrial risk assessment is to assist the judge and the attorney to decide what type of pretrial release from imprisonment would be appropriate. And therefore, the Department of Corrections pointed out it doesn't necessarily seem completely necessary for the department to be making pretrial risk assessments on folks who actually are not taking up jail bed pretrial. In other words, they were not brought in and arrested and held. So, and the Department of Corrections pointed out that there's a real workload and resource issue. There's a difference between assessing every single defendant, even those who aren't brought to jail, and only assessing the ones who are brought into custody. And so the commission, however, did want to be sure that if a particular defendant needed a pretrial risk assessment in the view of the prosecutor, that they would be brought and given a pretrial risk assessment at the request of the prosecutor. So this is really clarifying for the Department of Corrections the scope of the people that it needs to provide this pretrial risk assessment to.
Yeah, I think that was a good issue brought forward. So, and I like the at the request of the prosecutor. So I think pretty straightforward. Any questions on that? All right. Thank you. We can move on from there.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to let Suzanne handle number 13 because this is, again, a drafting error situation on a pretty technical subject that's new and evolved.
All right. Thank you, Gregory. Suzanne?
The chair, this is Suzanne DiPietro. Barbara and I are actually looking at each other. I'm wondering if we could seek your indulgence to have Barbara make that explanation.
All right, Barbara, thank you very much. You're up.
I will confess that my understanding of this is sort of fleeting, and so I have to sort of remind myself of what it is every time.
Like, it is very technical, but basically,
there's a provision in SB 91 that requires a victim to be provided notice for a release on administrative parole for certain offenders, but those offenders are not eligible for administrative parole. So it's really just a technical drafting error, and that provision should be deleted.
Sure. And I think the last paragraph on that page of the recommendation actually made it pretty clear that if they're not eligible, and we required that they be noticed, but they're not eligible, that we drop that language out. So we'll clean that up in the bill. So
I think remarkably, Senator Coghill, that gets us through the recommendations.
Thank you. I know that we wandered through it a little bit, but it looks like the high points of the recommendation are some of the same things that we brought before us at the commission's first introduction to our committee at this legislature, and that is the escalating nature of B misdemeanors, the potential for jail time under C felonies, and the thing on your violation of conditions of release. So that sounds like three real top things that both public safety and the public were just wearied by people not being held accountable and the judges not having the tools to get them into programs, and the police feeling that they were just kept from getting people off the streets who they felt were doing damage to the community. So those three kind of hit the surface at the top of the recommendations, in my view. So we'll try to draft these up. Is there any other questions for the commission? As we have, by the way, Mr. Razzo, for the time and effort, and Suzanne and Barbara, that you have put in over the last year, I think it's important to remind people that we expanded the timeline of the commission, but we also expanded the requirements for them to report back to us. So you have done a yeoman's job. You've met diligently in subcommittees and committees and come up with these recommendations, notwithstanding the other reports that you had to give. So thank you. Is there any other questions at this point? Well, I'm going to release you folks there at the Justice Commission. You've done a good job. I think you went through them rather rapidly. Is there any last comments, Mr. Razzo, as a chairman, that you would like to make before I move on?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I will say that, you know, the success of SB 91 really hinges on a couple things in my view, and this is just Greg Razzo's view, but number one, I guess, is the implementation and all of the training, I think, that we didn't really appreciate once the bill was passed that was going to be necessary. And that's training of troopers, municipal police officers, prosecutors, judges, defense lawyers. Basically, since the bill impacted the entire criminal justice system, in order to completely appreciate what it did and what it is expected to do going forward, there was just insufficient people to do that amount of training. We get training requests every day. We received one from Kodiak on Friday, and we received another one from another area in the state on Friday, and we will do our best to get out there and do the training, but there's only so much that part-time volunteer service and two staff members can do, and I can tell you that the court system has done an excellent job in getting out and explaining the law in SB 91, but again, that's one person in the court system and a lot of judges across the largest state in the nation. The other thing that has got to happen, and I think you need to keep in mind, is that this was the Justice Reinvestment Initiative. And the reinvestment is just beginning. That means that the services that need to be provided to these people still have not been implemented. And when we arrest to the folks that have tremendous substance abuse, alcohol, and drug addiction problems, and we place them on probation and tell them to get treated, and there's no place for them to get treated, the results, I think, are inevitable. So with those comments, we thank you for taking the time to hear from the commission today. On behalf of the commissioners, we thank you for your time, and that's all that I have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Razzo, Ms. Dunham, Ms. DiPietro, for the work that you've done and the conciseness and the quickness, because I know you met on Friday as a commission and had to go through the weekend to put these together. And I think it's going to be important, because my intention at this point is to then go to our legislative legal for drafting, so that we can have a document or two documents basically to come before us and deal with these recommendations. So thank you very much, and I'll discharge you at this point. I appreciate it very much, your time and effort.
Thank you.
So for the committee, just exactly what I said, what I'd like to do is get the technical parts in a technical bill that is a judiciary bill. And I don't have to make the decision now, but the question that remains for me is, do we take the policy calls that are in the recommendations 1 through 13, should we take them as a judiciary bill, or should I, as the chairman, take the lead with individuals so that individuals can put their name on it, yes or no? And so we don't have to answer that now, but I'm going to go ahead and request drafting, and then I will come around, and then the next committee meeting, which will be Wednesday, we're going to do some implementation conversation yet. At that point, I can tell you what the rest of the committee has said to me throughout their conversations. But I didn't want to spring a decision on you today. So as you can see, public condemnation has played a huge part in this, but I think, Senator Wilkowski, you're right. We need to keep it balanced against what we can demonstrate by whatever research we can find. But we cannot ignore the public who feels so violated. And so my intention is to move this forward as with whatever deliberate action we can do, get it up to the Finance Committee. I'm sure that some of them, you can't have more jail time and not have some cost associated with it. And so trying to find the balance between the cost of the state, the public safety, and our reinvestment opportunities to change people's behavior are going to be the things that we'll be dealing with. So thank you, members, for your time. And just because we have 3 o'clock, we don't have to go to 3 o'clock. So unless there's any comments from the committee at this point, we'll adjourn at 9:45.